Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, Harmeet Dhillon joins us for a variety of topics. Vaccine mandates, voter laws, challenges in Georgia, legally redistricting issues. So many different issues we cover with Harmeet Dhillon. I think you're going to really enjoy this lively and back and forth conversation. She does amazing work. Harmeet Dhillon is part of the solution. If you want to email us your thoughts, you could do so freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to support our show, you could do so by going to charliekirk.com/support. Make sure you're subscribed to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast by taking out your podcast app, typing in Charlie Kirk Show. And if you're on Apple, to make sure you're subscribed, it's a plus sign now in the upper right-hand corner. Just make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. We are on average for what, about Andrew? 3 episodes a day? It's about right. We're crushing it. 3 over a 24-hour period. And so I'm really proud of our team. We're working really hard. So please consider supporting us, charliekirk.com/support. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For personalized loan services you can count on, go to andrewandtodd.com, the wonderful andrewandtodd.com. With us now is somebody who can cover a variety of different issues and topics. She's also one of the good people involved in the RNC and is also doing a great job representing James O'Keefe, amongst many others. Harmeet Dhillon, you've probably seen her on television. She does a wonderful job. Harmeet, welcome to the Charlie Kirk Show.
Thanks. Happy to be here with you today, Charlie.
All right. There's a lot I want to talk to you about. Let's just start with the James O'Keefe story. He's been in the news the last couple of days. If I'm not mistaken, you are representing Project Veritas with the raid that occurred of his apartment. What is the latest with that situation?
Well, the latest is that, you know, they're kind of two parallel things happening. There's a situation happening with the New York Times where the New York Times is being sued by Project Veritas, and the New York Times has actually been publishing confidential information of Project Veritas. Separately, that raid did occur. It's been in the news, as you know, and I'm not at liberty to go into all of the details there, but what I will say is that I think that the situation of the United States Department of Justice using its awesome power to raid a journalist's home at 6 a.m. in the morning without probable cause, without due process, in violation of the First Amendment, the Privacy Protection Act, which is a federal statute, and United States Department of Justice guidelines passed by this very attorney general. I think it is truly chilling and shocking. It's something that should disturb every American journalist and every American citizen. And I am proud to be part of the team that's helping to expose what the DOJ is doing in coordination with liberal allies in the media and the government.
Yeah, the collusion is what is so stunning about this whole thing, which is it seems as if there is an inside-out relationship between the security apparatus and the New York Times. We had James on our show during America Fest, and he had to be careful what he said. I connected the dots for the audience in the sense that it sure looks like privileged conversations that James O'Keefe had somehow found its way into the New York Times lap. Now, how that happened, we don't know. Why the New York Times is in the business of publishing privileged information, it very well could have been from the raid and then turned around quickly and leaked illegally, which we know is a pattern from the security state. But regardless, we do know that James O'Keefe shockingly received a call from the New York Times right after this raid occurred. They would only know that if the information was leaked. And so can you talk a little bit about how once upon a time, the New York Times, a long time ago, 30 or 40 years ago, they used to be critics of the security state. Now they seem to be auxiliaries of it.
Well, absolutely. And I think you're absolutely correct in what you just said. There were 3 raids by the DOJ on Project Veritas employees in a very short 48 hours or so. In each of those cases, the New York Times, a pair of reporters there, knew exactly what had happened within minutes. And that's only possible There really is no other explanation than a leak from the United States Department of Justice, the same type of thing that we saw with CNN cameras being outside Roger Stone's home during a completely unnecessary violent raid. What's happening here is that the media, which used to be, you know, skeptical of the state generally, and by the way, that includes the whole liberal establishment, the American Civil Liberties Union, and so forth, they have become all too cozy with the government, and in part, that's because many of them are liberal and they're not shy about using inside information and trading favors with government officials to push a particular agenda. We certainly see that with respect to a complete lack of curiosity or criticism of COVID mandates, questioning sort of the efficacy of the vaccine on the Omicron virus. These types of issues, you have an adoring fanboy culture in the liberal media of the liberal state. And it's actually very scary. Even as a conservative, my entire life, I used to rely on liberal media and liberal activists to actually ask questions of the government and put the government to the test. That's missing now. And that's the gap that conservative lawyers like myself and conservative journalists like James and others are filling now. And there's very much fewer of us than there were of the liberal edifice. So we have a ways to go to catch up, Charlie.
Yeah, there's still some honest people out there. Glenn Greenwald has been really consistent, to his credit. Obviously, he's no fan of the security state. And I think that is a mutual hatred that they have of each other. He obviously broke the Edward Snowden story almost 10 years ago. So I want to ask you, Harmeet, there's this story that's been developing slowly in the last couple months of the National School Board Association of America that wrote this letter that then triggered surveillance from the Department of Justice, or at least we know threat assessment tags from the DOJ and FBI to categorize moms and dads as terrorists. Came out yesterday that the head of the education secretary, Cabrera, who's there now, actually there's evidence to show that he asked the National School Board Association of America to for the letter. Right. So this is an important point, that the government is asking a private organization for a letter to try and then get justification to then trigger domestic surveillance. Am I tracking this correctly?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And this is no surprise. This is, to me, this is part of a pattern. You know, we, for example, my law firm and nonprofit, the Center for American Liberty, sued the state of California over a similar fact pattern where after the 2020 election, the state, working together with the National Association of Secretaries of State and social media companies, asked the social media companies to take down speech of certain speakers that was critical of the Secretary of State. And Twitter did that in almost 100% of the cases, and other social media companies to a lesser degree. We sued over that. The court just dismissed that lawsuit, and you know, we're considering our next options. But what you are seeing is not just isolated incidents like this. It's a playbook. You have a, by the way, such a corrupt situation, because each of these corporations or, you know, entities is regulated by the same regulators who are asking for these favors, and these favors are being dealt as, I think, deal making for personal or business benefit. And that's what's so corrupt. The average citizen doesn't have access to letters or custom ordered prosecutions or takedowns. And only the powerful elites have that. In this case, you know, we aren't talking about individual teachers. We're talking about the powerful elites of the California and the other national teachers unions, which are incredibly powerful in electing people, Democrats throughout the United States, and now in wielding influence over exactly what children are being taught in the schools, and in fact, characterizing parents who care about their children as terrorists. This is something every parent and every American should be concerned about, Charlie.
Well, yeah. I mean, not only are they teaching critical race theory, but they're able to concoct a scheme to use the FBI to categorize parents they don't like as potential Timothy McVeighs. And that's a whole new level of influence in a bad way. I got to say, Harmeet, you're on the front lines of so many of these fights right now. I want to get into the big tech issue. I also want to kind of get into some of these, the OSHA mandate and the COVID regulation. There are not a lot of lawyers out there that are willing to challenge the power centers. And, you know, I joke around, I say, if you really want business, go get in the business of defending constitutionalists and conservatives, because business is a booming, as Leonardo DiCaprio would say, unfortunately. There's not a lot of you, as you well know, and it's very, very rare.
Look, stocks are at all-time high. People are saying things are going well, but you know they aren't. Interest rates are at zero, and the government just printed $5 trillion. What could possibly go wrong? Consumer confidence just hit a 10-year low, and inflation hit 6.8%, with parts of the United States seeing rates as high as 8%. Something's not adding up. Inflation is here, everybody, and you got to do something about it. Put some of your assets into precious metals, and it will keep your money away from the volatility markets and inflation and let you sleep at night. This month, Noble Gold is giving away a free America the Beautiful solid silver 5-ounce coin with any qualifying plan you start. So talk to an expert today at Noble Gold, and they'll run through the options to keep your money safe. No pressure, no hassling, no call centers, just a chance to speak to someone who knows what they're talking about. So go right now to NobleGoldInvestments.com or start by calling 877-646-5347, NobleGoldInvestments.com. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com.
I want to talk to you about some of the lawsuits you've been working on to challenge the Biden regime's vaccine mandate. I believe you're representing the Daily Wire in one of those complaints. It also impacts Turning Point USA. We have 195 people on staff. We said we're not going to comply. The Supreme Court heard arguments last week. Do you think Biden's vaccine mandate very well could be overturned?
Similar, over 100 employees. They're mainly based in Tennessee, and they are taking a leadership role here in this litigation. And so we were asked to file a lawsuit for them in the Sixth Circuit. And this type of a lawsuit is filed in the Court of Appeals originally. It's a rare type of a procedure. And after the court dissolved the injunction that the Fifth Circuit entered, about half of the parties went to the Supreme Court. So Daily Wire asked us to file a emergency petition in the Supreme Court. We did that. The court selected only two parties to argue. One was Ohio on behalf of secretaries of state, most of whom in the country are challenging this vaccine mandate for different reasons. And the other was a large business association. So based on the Friday hearings, I felt, I would say right after the hearing, that there were five solid votes to overturn the OSHA mandate or enjoin it. The potentially sixth one with Justice Roberts, who started off a little more skeptical, but made some, you know, very good comments during the argument. And then you definitely have three solid votes to defer to the government, even despite the very shallow record that the government has produced that the vaccine mandate is necessary in the workplace to prevent harm to workers that's unique to the workplace. So now it's been several days. Now we are 5 days later. And, you know, I've been sitting by the computer hitting refresh on the Supreme Court docket, like other lawyers who have cases before the court here in this situation. And so we're very concerned about it. But a couple of observations I'll share, because last year, my nonprofit and our law firm were involved in three separate lawsuits that won at the United States Supreme Court over religious liberties. And in those cases, the court didn't even have a hearing. They just did what we call a grant, cert, vacate the lower court and remand. In this case, I think in order to sort of shield itself from criticism, the court did schedule an argument, but it did it very quickly. And it did it with just two of the 13 or 14 parties before the court. That to me suggests that a lot of the justices already had their minds made up and started writing their opinions. That is, the clerk started writing the opinions over the Christmas break. And now I suspect the delay, which a lot of us expected that there would have been a ruling by Monday morning when the vaccine mandate went into effect, beginning of compliance. I think we're probably looking at some persuading and horse trading going on amongst the conservative justices, hopefully, to see if they can get to a larger consensus. And if there is a larger consensus, it's going to be on a narrow ground. So a lot of conservatives ask us, why didn't I hear about liberty? Why didn't I hear about the efficacy of the vaccine? Why didn't I hear about the Constitution so much during those arguments? And the answer is that skilled Supreme Court advocates like the ones before the court, they're really looking not to persuade the ones who are definitely not going to vote their way or the ones who are definitely going to vote their way. They're looking to persuade the couple of justices in the middle. And that's why they make arguments that are more limited and potentially technical than what advocates and sort of, you know, people who are very passionate about the Constitution would like. So I don't have a criticism of those arguments. I am nervous about the time that the court has been taking. I hope and still feel like we're going to get a positive ruling on the workplace mandate, on the mandate that has to do with hospitals and other medical facilities, because the mandate is tied to federal funding, I think there's a much larger chance the justices uphold that.
Well, that's disappointing. What do we think? What's your read on Amy Coney Barrett? She seems to be a little bit of a mystery on this. She was a big disappointment when it came to the college vaccine mandates. It was her district that she oversaw. What's your read on her?
Well, since I have cases before the Supreme Court, from time to time, I'm not going to criticize any particular justice. I will only say that I have been disappointed myself as a lawyer with many cases before the court in this past COVID cycle. At the results from the court, the rulings have generally been narrow, but Amy Coney Barrett did join the majority in a very important case that we had at the Center for American Liberty, Tandon versus Newsom, which was over people meeting in their homes to do Bible study during COVID. And she was one of the justices on the right side of that case.
Well,
so I hold out hope for this one.
I hope so. I know you have to be careful. I don't. So I hope that she goes the way of Gorsuch and Thomas and Alito. Kavanaugh's been okay. And Roberts has not.
Hillsdale College wishes to thank you for standing with them as they celebrate over 177 years of blessings. Since 1844, the Beacon of the North, the last college, Hillsdale College, has held fast to its mission to provide the kind of education essential to preserving free government. And for decades, the college has extended its educational mission on behalf of liberty through a variety of outreach programs. Perhaps you receive in Primus for every month, or have taken one of Hillsdale's excellent online courses, or attended one of Hillsdale's free regional events. You know of Hillsdale's refusal to take even one penny of government money. This independence allows the college to focus on promoting its core purpose, learning, character, faith, and freedom without government interference. And no time in our nation's history has there been a greater need for this kind of classical liberal arts education that Hillsdale offers on its campuses and nationwide. So during this season of blessings, Hillsdale thanks you for partnership in extending its mission to the country. To learn more about Hillsdale College and take their online courses, the Aristotle course, the Winston Churchill course, the Dying Citizen course, which I'm about to wrap up with Victor Davis Hanson. It's incredible. Check it out. New Victor Davis Hanson course. Go to charlieforhillsdale.com. Courses to learn about Western civilization, learn about God, learn about Genesis, the book of Genesis, the Constitution, and more. charlieforhillsdale.com. charlieforhillsdale.com.
Okay, Harmeet, I want to talk to you about voter integrity laws and kind of some of the challenges around that. Yesterday, Biden went down to Georgia looking for some votes to seal. And what's going on with the voter integrity laws? And you could take this a variety of different ways. You could look at it from an RNC perspective or a legal perspective or just a personal perspective. What do we need to know about this?
Okay, so starting with a personal perspective, that as an immigrant to this country, I can tell you that this country has the freest and most open elections in the world. It is very easy for American citizens to vote. There are a variety of ways to vote. And most Americans agree with what I just said. So when you hear the type of demagoguery, incoherent yet quite dangerous, the parts we understood from what the president said yesterday, you know that this message is being pushed not for reasons to increase voting in this country, but for reasons to obtain a partisan advantage in this country. And that's really not the appropriate role of the president, to be pushing these types of actual lies as he did in Georgia in order to undermine confidence in the integrity of our elections. This is truly scary. So even in Georgia, which I grew up in the Deep South myself, has a legacy of slavery. It is 2022, and it is not hard for African Americans or any minority to vote in the United States. It is very easy. It is easy for all of us. It is easy for immigrants. So what's really going on here is Democrats are trying to rig our elections to allow less security for the elections, to allow more anonymity in people being able to sign up to vote without any verification of who they are, to allow people to vote who aren't even United States citizens, which I think should be banned in this country. And so that's what's really going on here. Now, let's get more granular and talk about it from the Republican and RNC perspective. I have to say that I think that a lot of Republicans in the states, which is where most of our election laws are made, the vast majority of them, I think people were asleep at the wheel. I think Republican legislatures, including that of Georgia and many other red states, simply just had this kind of weak attitude towards these issues. They caved anytime anybody, Stacey Abrams or any other boogeyman, filed a lawsuit or made noises or called them mean names. And as a result, we had a, I think, catastrophic election in 2020 with an absolute shambles, compounded by COVID, of course. Everything was very opportunistic. And we did not have a lot of integrity in that election. We had a lot of opacity. We had a lot of doors being shut to observers. We had a lot of shenanigans. We had a lot of states like Wisconsin completely ignoring their own guidelines and written laws regarding who gets an absentee ballot. So the good news is that a lot of Republicans did wake up after that election. Legislatures, including Georgia's legislature and their governor, including Montana, you don't hear a lot about, but Montana did a great job overhauling their election laws and actually rolling back some of the destructive things that Democrats had done. You rarely see that. And so now what Democrats are doing, led by lawyer Mark Elias, who has an unlimited budget and dozens of lawyers at his disposal to go file completely frivolous lawsuits, they're simply attacking every Republican legislature or legislature in the country that has tried to increase the integrity of our elections. And so Republicans are playing a game of catch up. And so, you know, the Republican National Committee has actually done a terrific job. They get a lot of criticism, but as a member of the RNC, I can tell you the RNC has invested more in litigation in the last year than they ever have before, including five interventions in Georgia, which is a very important battleground state, and also planned litigation in other places. And I'm honored to represent the RNC in many cases and Republican parties throughout the country. Later today, I'll be filing a lawsuit in one of these states to protect the election integrity of that state. And I think it is, you know, heartening to see that. But I want to explain to your viewers, Charlie, that we see sometimes the Republican Party is raising more money than the Democratic Party. But what we don't see is that what the Democratic National Committee is doing is just the tip of the iceberg, literally. 9/10 of what they're doing is under the surface, and it's not being done through the party. It's being done through these fake nonprofits that these liberals have set up over the years, and they have hundreds of them. Hundreds of these nonprofits are raising money quietly, and there's, you know, dark money flowing into these coffers, and they're being used for political purposes. So even though you might see a plaintiff being an ACLU or a welfare rights organization or what have you, in reality, the money is coming from Democrat donors who are trying to rig elections to a particular outcome. So Republicans need to man up and match that dollar for dollar and get their checkbooks out and spend less money on, you know, crappy candidates who aren't possibly going to win their election, and spend that money instead on strengthening our laws so that it's not just members of Congress and Senate, but we're talking about school boards, we're talking about mayors, we're talking about where the majority of our laws and our governing is done. That can only be protected by strong laws in the states. And there is no federal solution for this. We have to be very vigilant of these efforts to try to make everything into California with H.R. 1, H.R. 4, you name it. They put some fancy name of some great civil rights leader on a law, and they push absolute garbage designed to shred our election laws. And we have to toe the line. Right now, Charlie, our ability in the states to have laws written at the level they're supposed to be under the Constitution, at the states, it depends on the good health and the favor of two Democrat senators, Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin. That is so scary. That keeps me up at night, that if one of those flips, changes their mind, gets COVID, who knows what's going to happen. So we can never allow ourselves as a party to be in that situation again. We must do better. We must elect better Republicans, and we must elect better Republicans at the state level as well.
So I appreciate that take. A lot of our audience, though, doesn't really buy part of what you said, just to be very honest. Because the RNC wasn't on top of it in 2020. They weren't. The reason we have two Democrat senators in Georgia, like you just said, Warnock and Ossoff, is Brian Kemp signed a consent decree in the spring of 2020 and no one knew about it. Where were the lawsuits then?
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. I'm not defending that. I don't think that there was a great record here. But what I want to again emphasize is that the majority of our election laws are made at the state level. Okay. And I can tell you, as a Republican lawyer who has gone to the RNC, every single time I see an issue that I become aware of, whether it's in my state, California, or whether it's in another state, the lawsuit I'm going to file today is not in California. I go to the RNC and I ask for support and I get it. Okay. So it's a matter of people finding out about these issues, stepping up, and then filing these lawsuits.
I get it. That's the case now. But honestly, Harmeet, we lost 2020. We lost those races because we raised hundreds of millions of dollars and we didn't do that. So I'm glad the lessons learned. I'm glad that's the case. But people like me were smeared in 2020 for talking about mail-in ballots. And Brian Kemp said everything was great. So
no, you're right. I'm not defending Brian Kemp. I'm not defending Raffenberger.
I'm glad
and
they're not the only ones. Now, but there were hundreds
of the only ones.
A lot of donors gave a lot of money to go watch Warnock and Ossoff win in a very, very win, a very fixable situation where there could have been a special session called in Georgia and there were no lawsuits. There was nothing. And we just like, oh, yeah, we're just going to let 1.2 million ballots go into the state of Georgia. I think it's I agree that there's been changes made, but it's we're in this situation because of some of the organizations that raised hundreds of millions of dollars and didn't do anything. But I'm glad it's fixed. So.
But can I add one more point, which is that there's an institutional problem, which is that a lot of the lawyers who have typically been given the business, the contracts to do this type of litigation inside the Beltway, and I mean dollars from the RNC, the NRCC, the NRSC, all the alphabet Republican organizations, which bombard your phone with direct mail messages all day long, they like to hire, you know, certain handful of establishment lawyers in DC, which is not me, by the way. I'm as far away from DC as you can be.
And you're part
and
of
those
solution.
Lawyers just, wouldn't stand up. Well, and that's what I mean. Like, we don't just need better Republican legislators and lawmakers. We need better Republican lawyers and more of them.
I get intense about this, Armeet, and you're part of the solutions because I know firefighters and police officers that gave more money than they had because they started getting text messages about fighting for voter integrity and all this. And I hear stories that we didn't even have lawyers on retainer in Nevada when Matt Schlapp landed on the ground. That's his story, not mine. And so I get really frustrated when middle Americans start to go into their savings to try to fund these efforts. And there's nothing. I'm glad that you're on the case. And so we're changing things. I know that's the case. And I've talked to Rana about this and she, acknowledges that there's a lot better operation running here. I do want to make sure it's clear, though, that as we look at the Democrat controlled Senate, there's no reason why Warnock and Ossoff ever shouldn't have won.
I agree with you.
So I do want to focus on this one part. You bring up a really important point, which is Mark Elias and his attempt to try to disqualify people from office. Is this even legally tenable to try to say that? Have you seen this story? I don't know.
I have, yes.
So please go ahead.
So let me tell you that this is something that I took a leadership role in California. So for example, Gavin Newsom and the Democrat legislature here wanted to impose a requirement that President Trump or any candidate release their tax returns as a condition of being on the ballot for governor or president in California. And of course, that is not a requirement in the United States Constitution. And we are a country of laws. But we had to go to court at the expense of Republican organizations and candidates. And in my case, I represented three Republican voters, including lawmakers here in California. And we had to challenge that with our own money. And we challenged it and we won. And we established yet again the principle that states and governors and secretaries of state and even Supreme Court justices of a state, they don't have the right to change the qualification requirements to get on a ballot. Only in the case of a presidential qualification, it's what's in the United States Constitution, okay? And so I do not think Mark Elias, for all of his bluster, he can go to court, he can make noises, but until we have a constitutional amendment that puts these fake controversies into the Constitution, which in my opinion is never going to happen, not in my lifetime, hopefully, I think he's just making noise and raising dollars, and that's all. I think that he's not going to be able to disqualify President Trump or anybody based on some fake criteria. Now, what I will say is that there are Republicans out there who, you know, frankly, don't deserve the title of Republican, who will readily side with, I think, people who are inimical to the values of this country to join with Democrats on that. There are Republicans in Congress right now. There's Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger and you name it. And there are some Republican senators who will say something on television and say something different in the cloakroom. And so that's a problem. That's right. But overall, I think that, you know, I am ready and many other lawyers will be ready with lawsuits if any such thing ever passes into legislation. I can promise you that.
I think it's laughable from a legal perspective, the fact that you could disqualify people for insurrection, even though no one's been charged with insurrection. But he is a slippery guy and he's very sneaky and he controls a lot of money. And I encourage everyone to go read the Time magazine article written by Molly Ball, the secret campaign or the shadow campaign that saved the 2020 election. And Elias was the center role of that. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. People make a big deal out of New Year's resolutions, but I want you to commit to one right now. Resolve to do something that will help make this country
get its greatness again and get back on track, like supporting causes and companies that share our values. I'm proud to tell you about my friends at Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative cell phone provider. I use Patriot Mobile and you should too. They offer broad nationwide coverage. In fact, they use the same towers as the major carriers. So you get the same great nationwide coverage plus the peace of mind that your money isn't supporting the radical left. Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget and is 100% U.S.-based customer support team provides exceptional customer support. More importantly, Patriot Mobile shares your values and supports organizations like Turning Point that are fighting for religious freedom, constitutional rights, sanctity of life, and our veterans. Go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie right now. Get a free activation with the offer code Charlie. Veterans and first responders save even more, so switch today. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie. PatriotMobile.com/Charlie. Or call 972-PATRIOT. Or call 972-PATRIOT. Harmeet, I'm going to open it up. What's on your mind that we haven't covered that you're working on or that you think our audience needs to know about?
Well, Charlie, I think the big tech censorship issue is definitely one where I feel it's a very critical thing for the future of our country in so many different ways. My law firm over the years has filed many lawsuits against the big tech companies. I think I've sued all of them in different ways over time. The lawsuit that I mentioned earlier in the hour against Twitter on behalf of Rogan O'Hanley, I feel that's a very important case. And, you know, we're likely to take that case to the next step as well to appeal, because the idea that the government can collude with corporations to silence our speech in the very places that Americans talk today and gather, particularly during COVID, especially during COVID, I think that's really problematic. But ultimately, I think that the main way that we're going to be able to prevent that from happening in the future is if we do two things. Number one, we have to elect lawmakers to office, whatever party, who are committed to openness mm-hmm. and freedom of speech and not corporations. And number two, they need to not be committed to it in rhetoric, but actually do it and have it be passed and signed by a president. Now, in both parties, we see these big tech companies really electing their own puppet lawmakers, and that includes a lot of Republicans. So the problem is a bipartisan problem, and I think it requires a bipartisan solution. That's one big issue.
I hope you're right. Just to update our audience, what, if any, are the legal avenues to challenge these alleged private companies? Yeah, they're private, like ComEd is private, right? I mean, they're public utilities. They should be treated as such. But I mean, what is there any legal accountability path here? It just seems like most of these lawsuits fail.
Well, they do fail, and I've filed several of them. So the challenges that have failed have included Prager University claiming that YouTube is a public forum. I've sued Twitter not over freedom of speech per se, but violating its own terms of service. So using a contract theory, and the court shut that down in California on the basis of Communications Decency Act Section 230. Right now, I think the wrong interpretation of Communications Decency Act Section 230, which is a minor little statute, 1996, never meant to be a total block of liability to these companies. It is barring almost every type of lawsuit. And I mentioned the lawsuit that I just filed and we just got a negative ruling on. I thought that was a case that definitely should have proceeded, and we may see it proceed ultimately after we appeal. The question is whether the government can collude with private entities to suppress your civil right. That is to speak freely about an election. That's protected First Amendment activity. And certainly, where a company on its own has rules and it has its own rules and it can get away with under Communications Decency Act censoring you, that doesn't mean the government can do that. And the government can do that using the tool of big tech censors. So that's a game changer. And if we can get past that roadblock, I think that's a viable theory. The government's involvement definitely changes the analysis. But we see that with respect to COVID restrictions, with respect to everything, with respect to school boards. The government is telling these mouthpieces what to say. They're saying it and they're getting benefits or social credit as a result of it. That's hugely problematic, and that violates the First Amendment. Well,
the social credit's a really important point. I mean, we are living in the beginning stages of a woke social credit system. We are. If you say the right 100%. Things or do the right things, you get treated completely differently.
by the regime. We used to make fun of China for this. Like, oh, yeah, they measure whether or not you jaywalk and you get a different score. Now it's like, yeah, actually, they care about your stance on the vaccine and whether or not that it's extraordinary. Okay, Harmeet, just reiterate how people could support you, pending projects, websites, all of that.
Well, I think the most important way for people to support is at www.libertycenter.org. That's my nonprofit. We've filed over 20 lawsuits, and we are going to be filing a lot more with your support on Twitter and Instagram at PNJABAN. And finally, my law firm is www.dillonlaw.com. And thank you, Charlie, for having me and talking about these important issues. I really appreciate it.
You're doing a wonderful job. You're part of the solution, Harmeet. I mean that. You do a great job.
Thank you.
So thanks so much. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. God bless you guys. Speak to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.